the real beauty of freedom is, like, even in systems where things are constructed with so many restrictions and control grids that exist that you feel like you'll never get out of that kind of control grid, you still have people who can think their way out of it. And I think that's the real beauty of crypto in general, not like this one coin or that one coin, but just like in general, was this whole thought process of, we're going to think our way out of this economic enslavement, you know, and we're going to create a whole other system that we can use to have economic freedom, which, you know, in a debt slave society is real freedom.
Monero Talk is sponsored by Cake Wallet, a trustless open source wallet that gives you the keys to your crypto. Invoice, donate, and trade your Monero with peace of mind, piece of cake. And by StealthyX, an instant exchange where privacy is a top concern. Go to StealthyX.io to instantly exchange between Monero and 450 plus assets without having to create an account or register, and with no limits, making StealthyX a simple way to purchase Monero with crypto anonymously. Monero Talk is also made possible from contributions by viewers and listeners like you, and supporting us is easier than ever by typing in MoneroTalk.crypto in your Monero.com or Cake Wallet send address field to send us a tip.
This week on Monero Talk, Douglas Tooman interviews Sam Bent, aka Doing Fed Time, an ex-Darknet market vendor, about the recent shutdown of the incognito Darknet market. They discuss the incident details, analyze common issues with these markets, explore ideas for more decentralized marketplaces, and much more. Monero Talk starts now.
All right, Sam, how's it going, man?
It's going well. How about yourself?
I'm highly entertained with everything that's going on in crypto, as always. It's like, I haven't really reached that point of, you know, I'm getting bored of this, because it's just the roller coaster keeps gaining momentum, right?
Yep.
I feel like things are really picking up. Most recent entertaining things are Monero's increase in transaction count. I don't know if you've seen that.
I heard a little bit about it. Yep.
Yeah, so that's quite interesting. We normally have like 20,000 transactions a day, and then it's been bumped up to like 130, like 140 transactions a day for like the last week too. It didn't just go up and come down. It went up and stayed up. It's just every day it's one. So we went from like 20 to 30K per day to 130K per day. So everybody's got their eye on that. Obviously, there's a lot of theories, right, of what it can be and what it means, but that's been highly entertaining. And then I think another thing is what we're seeing with the incognito market going down. I think that's a big story, and anybody interested in Monero, I think, should have their eye on that as well. That's why I reached out to you. That was my thinking there, and just remembering, we have great conversations, so just wanted to get in touch with you anyway. Because when was the last time you came on?
A while ago. I think it was about a year now.
Okay. I'll just go out and ask it now. Any chance we get you down to Buenos Aires, man? That we would love to have you down there for Metropolia.
I don't know. I'd have to see what the laws are like regarding, you know, people with felonies. Because I know there's some countries I can't go to.
I feel like Argentina is one of those ones you can go to, right? It's like infamous for that. Like everybody left Europe and headed over to Argentina, right? So that might work out.
It would be interesting, yeah. I had the one of the heads, this guy Thomas of Europol, hit me up and asked me if I would do a talk in the Netherlands. I said the same thing, you know, but I'm not really a fan of those, like the closed talks, you know, especially when it's like a talk with law enforcement, man. It's kind of,
oh yeah, that's
a sour taste in my mouth right off the bat.
Yeah, well, we'd love to have you as a speaker. We could continue to talk about that off air, but let me back up, man. Do you want to do a quick little intro of yourself for those of watching who don't yet know you?
Yeah, for sure. My name's Sam Ben. I was a darknet vendor. I ended up getting busted. I was also an admin for a period of time. I ended up getting busted, went to federal prison, and studied law while I was there, and acted as my own lawyer and got myself out. And when I got myself out, the thing that really kind of drove me nuts about a lot of the things that are out there regarding the, especially around the, centered around the dark net, is the misconceptions and the misunderstandings and just the fear mongering that exists, you know, surrounding it. And, you know, I guess you kind of see that in your scene too, as far as crypto goes, you know, like, oh, what do you need privacy for? It's money laundering. It's drug dealers. You're sponsoring terrorism. And it's like, well, I just want to be left alone, man.
That's all we hear.
It's not any of those things. But in my case, it was definitely narcotics trafficking. So,
there was no sugarcoating that one.
Oh yeah, no, you can't. You know, you get it all. You know, if you do something, man, I'm a firm believer in that. You know, if you do something, you definitely have to own it. And when you own it, I think you get empowered by it. You know, instead of hiding from it and trying not to mention it on applications, I try to, you know, spotlight it, you know, and say, hey, look, I ran an international business, you know,
right,
in a hostile network, you know. So I think it's a selling point to some degree.
Obviously, I'd hire you, man. I'd hire you, man, with a resume like that. Like, actually, to that point, I don't know if you're aware, we're working on a marketplace, XMR Bazaar. Obviously, it's, you know, this isn't going to be the next Silk Road. This isn't a dark market. I'm clearly the owner of it. It is centralized to some degree, but it's going to be a way for people to buy and sell goods and services directly with Monero, maybe like gold backs, things like that. Obviously, trying to reduce the rules as much as possible in terms of what people want to do with the market, but in a way where we're not held liable for anything. And then it's going to have Monero multi-sig built into it. So
nice.
There'll be trustless escrow.
Yep.
But yeah, I was thinking of you. Maybe you'd be interested in working on it with us, helping out. Maybe we could talk about that, because I was listening to your and we'll get into this. I was listening to your episode where you're reviewing one of the dark marketplaces, and obviously you do an amazing job describing everything. But then your ideas on what can make for a more ideal marketplace, I thought were fantastic.
Yep.
But yeah, getting ahead of myself, we'll get to those topics. Let's start talking about the big news, which is Incognito market that went down. I know you're kind of intimately familiar with these things for research purposes. You're constantly keeping an eye on everything.
Yep.
Give us the rundown on what happened there.
Yeah. So basically, Incognito was a darknet market that specialized in drugs. They had probably one of my favorite features about Incognito was the fact that you could hop on and you could, like, if you wanted a feature, you could hop on and you could put that out there as a vote, and people would vote it up or vote it down. And then the market admin would, you know, decide if they were actually going to implement it. But I thought it's probably one of the most democratic things I've seen, because a lot of darknet markets tend to be tyrannies. So that was pretty cool. It was very democratic of him, but he ended up, you know, not being the greatest person in the world. First off, you know, when you have exit scams, which for those of you that don't know, it's like when a market has this system of taking in money and they're the arbiters, or they're the escrow between the vendors and between the buyers. They control these wallets, and they could just take the money, or they can make it so that nobody can take money out, or nobody can send money, or like they have complete control over it. And when they do these exit scams, a lot of times what happens is they just lock all the wallets. They let people still deposit, but they don't say anything. They go dark. And that's kind of one of the preliminary ways that you can tell a market might exit scam, is if you have staff that were very talkative, and now they're not very talkative. So like when I see a market where the admins don't talk a lot, or, I mean, you know, don't even have a PR guy on the forums, because a lot of them will hire PR guys, go out there and talk for them on the forums. When they don't even have that, it tends to send out some red flags. So when you see a market that stops talking, and all of a sudden you have technical issues or they have to do an update, it starts to raise a lot of flags. You got a lot of people in the darknet subculture who have been through this a lot of times, right, for many, many years. So a lot of people have PTSD with this, where you'll see a market might do like a legitimate update and might have like a little bit of downtime, and they have this downtime. People are like, oh, it's an exit scam. And they it's like a bank run, right?
Everyone, that's amazing. I mean, well, yeah. So two things that come to, it's like, so how has nobody implemented trustless multisig yet in these dark markets? They have, right? Somebody's doing that, no?
Yeah, I think there's one that I had heard of that was, because I have a whole list of markets that I'm going through, but like the, like when I go through and I check out these markets, I do a pretty deep analysis, so I take them one at a time. But as far as I know, there is one that is, that does use multisig, it's XMR. But with this, so with this guy, like he did an exit scam. That's a kind of typical thing that happens. You don't see much communication, but he ended up buying a site called Darknet Live, and he did that to try to corral the news, like to make it so it was one less news source that was going to be, you know, shouting from the rooftops that this market's exit scamming, which is an interesting move. And Hug Bunter, who's the administrator on one of the biggest darknet forums, Dread, had made this whole post about this specific issue with the darknet market administrator. His name's Pharaoh, by the way. So he had made this whole post about this guy Pharaoh and how Pharaoh, you know, went to go buy this basically this news outlet to try to, you know, keep the news close to the chest and put out counter intelligence at the same time, propaganda. So that was really interesting. So I've never seen a market exit scam and try to acquire ClearNet sites for like disinformation campaigns. So that was a first that I'd ever seen that too. Might have happened in the background. I definitely am not, like, I'm not good with the politics of the darknet. Like this one talking to this one and, you know, these people, I kind of just stay in my lane and just observe as I explore. But it was really interesting seeing all this kind of crazy stuff happen. And what ended up happening was, as time went on, I guess him stealing, you know, millions or tens of millions or hundreds of millions, I don't think anyone actually knows besides him. Besides him stealing all this money, he came back. And one point I'd like to like really make is, like, you have darknet vendors who like are members of cartels, like violent gangs. You have organized crime that are syndications that are darknet vendors on the darknet that, you know, peddle narcotics on an international level. So you have like a lot of serious criminals that are out there that are darknet vendors. Now, what's funny is that some of the people get the most time and you have darknet vendors that get life sentences, but are the darknet administrators. They tend to get smoked with time. And
oh, really?
Yeah. Because it's a massive conspiracy and they're the head of it. And like when you get charged federally, if you're the head of a conspiracy, you have upward departures and downward departures. So like if I was selling drugs, but I was selling it online, it's a 3-point upward departure, which could mean an extra year or an extra 4 years. They have all these little things that you take one charge and build it up so that you get a momentum, like a crazy amount of time for a single charge, because they have all these things that increase the severity of it incrementally. Like mass marketing is one of them. If you sell it online, all that kind of stuff. So like with this guy, he ended up going and doing this exit scam, and he came back and my point with the whole, you know, dark, a lot of darknet vendors can be psychopaths or members of dangerous cartels. A lot of darknet administrators are just like web developer dudes that are like, you know, like these dudes aren't like, they're not cutting anyone's throat or, you know, sticking tires over people and lighting them on fire and you know, killing families and shit. Like they're, you know, they're learning how to manage back ends and you know, middle tier stuff do development, you know. But this guy, like, you know, this guy came out the woodwork, like, you know, hey, I'm as bad as they are. and like, you know, went and did his exit scam and then kept the site up and came back and said, hey, listen, I know I said this whole time that everyone's been communicating that all your communications were secret, that I had, you know, purged all the data. But the actual truth is that I've kept everything. I have, like, you know, home addresses. I have communications between vendors and buyers. I have all this stuff. And what I'm going to do is, if you're a vendor and you're level one, like you're a small time vendor, I'm going to charge you $100 and you're going to pay, and then you can get your conversations and, you know, the information your customers gave you and you talked about back. And if you're a large vendor, then you're going to pay me your level five tier. You're going to pay me $20,000 for that and get it back. And like, right, one thing that really surprised me, man, was like right off the bat, you saw a good portion of the vendors that were listed immediately give it up and be like, okay, you know, and like, here's 20 grand. And it just, to hand over money to somebody who just robbed you and is in the process of robbing you. And I mean, to trust that person to me is absolute insanity. But on the flip side of that, it tells me a lot about, at the end of the day, when you look at like OPSEC, right? You look at like, what information am I putting out there that my adversary can capitalize on and use advantageously against me? And controlling that information that goes out there is the whole point of it. So if this isn't a situation you've thought of, and like, you know, some of these darknet vendors are making a crazy amount of money. So if this is something you haven't even thought of, and it's a business, you're running a business, that's absolutely insane to me to make a decision like that with, you know, it's obviously an emotional decision, because if you understood the fact that if I get one argument all the time, and it's like, well, if a darknet vendor saves addresses and like, let's say Doug orders 2 ounces of Coke for me, right? And I write, oh, Doug at this 123 Main Street in
Enjoy.
Indiana, you know, you know, ordered this on this day at this time, and I have all your info. How that actually works is, if I get raided and I'm like, oh, I have this customer list and I have this huge list of all the people who have ever ordered from me, and the feds are gonna be like, okay, cool, yeah, like we'll check it out, and, you know, we'll talk about consideration, and then you show it to them, and now maybe they call you with 4 ounces. No, maybe they, when they raided the darknet vendor, they caught them, say, with, I don't know, 200 grams of Coke, right? And so his charge is going to be probably like a 5 to 10 year thing, depending on his priors and a bunch of other stuff. But when he says, oh, here I sold, you know, and there's this thing that says, oh, Doug bought every week, Doug bought an ounce. Like, they're not just going to charge him for that transaction that you did. They're going to say, well, how long was he selling? How long was he a vendor for? And they're going to be like, oh, he was a vendor for a year. Okay, well then, you know, he didn't hit this sale to Doug. If it was a weekly thing, then we're not going to charge him with those 2 ounces that he sold him. We're going to charge him with over 100 ounces, because there's, you know, 52 weeks in a year. And if he bought 2 ounces a week, we're going to charge him with this. And it's like, and what blows people's mind is like, yeah, but they don't have those drugs. How can they charge someone with possession of narcotics that they don't have? It's called ghost weight. And they'll just assign this deal and be like, you know, so now it goes from, because you decided to keep information for blackmail purposes, which we'll get into the buyer side of that. But now it goes from you having a charge of maybe 5 to 10 years to having a charge that's 10 years to life. Because you have all this weight that, and all these different, you know, times. And even if you don't have what was actually sold, by you keeping those records, you have a record of who bought what when. They can go in and they can say, well, typically you sold an ounce of Coke, so even though Mike's not listed here, we're going to assume that he bought an ounce. And we see that Mike's name is here 50 times. So you screw yourself so bad with that as a darknet vendor on a federal U.S. Be clear about that. That's U.S. law. So on a U.S. level, now moving over to the buyers.
Yeah. No, wait. Oh, before you, did they show some proof that they actually have this information, or they just said, hey guys, we have this information?
No, not that I heard of or that I saw.
Okay.
Yeah. Which is a great point, too. Yeah. Right. I mean, again, you know, the
blind, absolutely right. They may not even have this information that they're threatening people.
Right. And it's super indicative of an emotionally charged decision, right? Hmm. Why wouldn't you ask that before you hand over 20K?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I guess from their perspective is like cost of doing business, right? Like they're like, you know, like you said, a lot of these guys are making a ton of money. So to them, it's almost why chance not paying, right?
Yeah. I mean, I see it completely different. I see it as a sign of weakness that, you know, you're willing to break that quick over that small of a threat. I mean, like, you know, if there was, if I'm your co-defendant and I see like me and you are in on a criminal conspiracy and maybe we just shot someone and, you know, I see someone come over and threaten to beat you up unless you give them your sneakers and you're like, okay, please don't hurt me. Here are my sneakers. I'm going to be like, man, this dude is never like, as soon as like the FBI interviews us, this dude's going to sell me down the road. Like you're petrified of these small things. So for me, seeing these vendors get scared and pay this money this quick, I didn't see it as like, oh, we're going to do this just in case. For me, I saw it as just a sign of weakness.
Yeah.
Now, is that what it is? No, that's just my interpretation of it. Yeah, you could be absolutely right. Now, transitioning to the buyers, like, what's the danger for them? Well, if I'm a darknet vendor, if giving feds names and addresses gets me a reduced sentence, first off, the first thing that anyone's going to do when they start becoming a darknet vendor is going to go into the yellow pages and they're going to get massive lists of people's names, addresses, and phone numbers. And they're going to be like, oh, these are all my buyers. If actually giving feds names and addresses of people on the darknet that you've done business with got you time reductions, every darknet vendor would be getting massive time reductions by just grabbing random people's info, right? So there's no corroboration with that. Now, if I'm selling drugs, it, like in person, and I sell you drugs, there is corroboration because I can wear a wire. They can do surveillance. I can come talk to you about that time I sold you 2 ounces. Like, there's a whole bunch of things they can do to prove that. But like, you know, if you bought off the darknet, I can't, as a darknet vendor, be like, oh, that's Doug right there. It's the guy without the glasses and the white shirt. I have no idea what you look like. You know, there's no way to corroborate it. And, you know, and if I hop into an IM and I write you, I'd be like, hey, Doug, remember that time 3 months ago when you bought 2 ounces of coke from me? Yeah. Like, I don't know who the fuck you are. And you're going to go create another, you know, another future name. Are you going to burn that identity and go create another one? So there's no corroboration. Closest thing they can have is like controlled deliveries where like the feds will intercept a package and try to deliver it to you as a darknet buyer. But again, if you understand basic OPSEC, you know about controlled deliveries, you know how to spot them, and it's not like a hard thing. There's not a lot of like science that goes into it. So darknet buyers then, like statistically and based off the wall, like they are way safer than darknet vendors. So for a darknet vendor to pay money for something because this darknet administrator is saying, here, I'm going to release all the conversations and the addresses. The addresses are useless. The names are useless. If the buyers can't be indicted with that information alone, then it doesn't matter. So again, it goes back to my point of like, so why, as a vendor, why would you pay this? Because you don't know. Right. I mean,
that's
the only other thing. And the only other argument that I've heard that does kind of make sense is like, okay, well, what if you're in, you know, what if you're in a country that has very severe drug laws, you know, like, you know, there's a ton of countries where it's a very serious offense. I say, okay, yeah, like that makes sense. But I mean, the U.S. is like that too. We give people life sentences for drugs. So, yeah. I mean, if I go, you know, people are like, well, what about China? Like, you know, what if like, you know, like thieves get their hand cut off? And I'm like, listen, man, like you go, you ask the woman who got a life sentence for stealing chocolate chip cookies because it was her third offense, right? Three strikes, you're out. She had a life sentence for it. Go ask her, hey, if we cut your hand off, but you don't have to be in prison for 30 years, would you want to do it? Guarantee you, she's going to be like, yeah, go ahead, cut my hand off. So it's inconsequential.
Deal.
It's the first time in history that I know of that we've seen a darknet vendor, or, I'm sorry, a darknet administrator come back and try to extort people, which I think the good thing about this is that it's it being the first time, there's going to be a ton of learning and reflection that happens after this. But, you know, we saw with Hansa, you know, basically the feds in the Netherlands, it was a darknet market that got taken over by feds. They took it over because basically a third party business contacted them and they're like, hey, this darknet market's being hosted on this server. Like, it wasn't from incredible investigation work, you know? It was like they were handed the answer to where the server was, and they went and they took over the server. Like, it's not like some, you know, like a lot of times when I hear press conferences about darknet markets, like, we took them down, they can't hide behind anonymity anymore. And I'm like, yeah, but like if I'm like the Alpha Bay administrator and I put my Gmail in the header of the welcome page of Alpha Bay for the first 3 months, like, that's not some amazing hack that you carried out to take me down, you know? It's a pretty easy one. It's just paying attention. So
fall, yeah.
Yeah. So and a lot of the times that's what it is. So I think we see far more complicated, you know, attacks when we talk about breaches on private companies, or, you know, ransomware, any of those things.
So,
law enforcement could definitely take a page out of some of the criminality that's going on and some of the breaches that happen. But anyways, going back to the admin, this being the first time this kind of thing has happened where an admin exit scams and then comes back to extort, it's super interesting watching people's reactions, you know, because people get pissed off when markets exit scam, but like, they're so used to it, it's kind of like second nature. They're just like, oh yeah, that market, right, you know, they're scumbags, you know, and they just move on. But now, like, with this guy extorting, they're like, oh, someone's going to find him. And I can't imagine, man. I'd be infuriated too. But especially if at the end of the day, you know, it's all because of your own lax OPSEC. So my point I was talking about with Hansa is the police took it over and they had a auto encrypt feature that existed on that site. And what happened is people get complacent in security. On this end with security, you have security. On this end, you have ease. And what happens is over time, people start going more towards this side because they don't, you know, no one wants to have to unlock 20 deadbolts on their door when they come home with a bag full of groceries. So, you know, they start not locking them all and they get to a point where they don't maybe lock any of them. Or they just lock one and it invites the ability to be able to get any easier. Good security isn't necessarily to keep bad guys out. It's especially with physical security, it's there to make it so that to break in, it takes longer, which increases the chances of you getting caught. Like, you know, if I put up a door that's a hollow door, you can kick it in and walk in and you're in and out in 2 seconds. If it's a steel core door, you know, reinforced, it's going to take you a lot longer. You have a much higher chance of getting caught. So it's worth that investment because it might stop a robbery. But people got complacent. They stopped, you know, encrypting their own messages on Hansa, and they started trusting in the market's auto encryption feature. And when the feds in the Netherlands took it over, they disabled that ability. They disabled that feature, and they made it so they could collect data for, you know, months. And there were definitely people that got arrested because of that later on. But there, again, we didn't see hardly any fallout in terms of United States darknet buyers. So that's why, again, why I'd reiterate why, you know, addresses and names and conversations are irrelevant. I can go right now on the darknet and order drugs to your house, right? Like with OSINT, it might take a while, but like, you can find out where anyone lives and you can hop on the darknet. Anyone, you know, especially using privacy coin, in order drugs to anyone's house. So there's no guarantee that when drugs are actually ordered, it's a, you know, it's an automatic indictment. So now we've went from law enforcement taking over a market and capitalizing on that trust of the auto encrypt feature to a darknet market administrator doing the exact same thing, using people's own complacency and trust to be able to extort them for information that is basically not worth anything anyways. And, you know, it totally worked.
Do you love coffee and Monero as much as we do? Consider making gratuitous.org your daily cup. Pay with Monero for premium fresh beans, and if you like what you taste, send a digital cash tip directly to the Guatemalan farmers that made it possible. Proceeds help us grow this channel, Gratuitous, and Monero.
It's crazy. I mean, my take was that it was kind of irrational, right, for this market to do this, right? They're running away with a lot of money, right? The crypto prices are up. Why then take this added risk of extorting people? And like you said, pitting some of the, you know, perhaps most dangerous people in the world against you that want to come and find you. I mean, they took a ton of risk in doing this. It doesn't seem like something that any rational admin would do, right? Like you said, these guys.
I think it shows, you know, a lot of, like, it's kind of like you could say the same thing about, like, when you see law enforcement that's brave, right? You see, like, mm-hmm. like, for example, if you see, like, a guy is, you know, he's shooting a bunch of people or whatever, or he's victimizing someone, and you have a bunch of people that are running away from that situation, like, law enforcement, they're supposed to be the people running towards the bullets to stop them from, you know, hurting. They're supposed to be peace officers. Right. And, like, you know, with firefighters, it's the same thing. Like, imagine if, like, you know, but, like, a lot of times we'll hear about cops who killed someone, and they'd be like, well, I was in fear for my life. I always tell people, I'm like, let's take that same context and put it into firefighters. Like, you know, take a firefighter, when my house is on fire, they show up and like they get out and they're like, oh, the house is really on fire. And I'm like, yeah, man. You're like, yeah, we're in there. And they're like, oh, well, I don't, you know, I might get hurt if I go in. I mean, you know, I don't really want to drive. Like, dude, why do you have this job? Like, you're supposed to be brave. You're supposed to do dangerous things. This is why, you know, society bestows a certain amount of honor and trust.
Payment. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and it's like, you know, and people be like, you know, the same, that kind of comparison. It's like, you know, law enforcement's supposed to be reactive. Like, I go to your house, I punch you in the mouth. That's assault. I can be arrested. Fair enough, right? I violated your person. I absolutely deserve to be arrested. But, like, imagine if, like, I went to your house and they just arrested me because they're like, well, you might punch him in the mouth. And, like, we have, like, these preemptive arrests where it's, like, you know, just kind of like the fire department scenario where you, like, cops go out and look for crime happening. Like, imagine if firefighters went out and looked for fires happening. Like, it sounds idiotic and crazy, but it's kind of the same philosophy, you know? And it's just, it's a total side issue, I guess. But my mind is an absolute maze and we can get lost in it.
I know. I'm loving it too. I'm taking it all in. I mean, yeah, that's a whole nother thread to go down. And I do think that it's a fair way of looking at it. But how does that relate? Because I was saying with these guys, right, it seemed irrational that they did this. So you're saying, like, what?
Yeah, I mean, you know, like, it's a great comparison, I think, for the dark net. Is like, you have like a sheep, right? You take a sheep and, you know, you put a sheep inside a fence to keep it safe from the wolves. And that sheep knows it's safe, but, like, it's very limited in what it can do, right? It's very limited in what it gets to eat because you're the one who feeds it. It's very limited on, like, will it go outside? Will you open the door and let it out of the barn? Like, all of those things are dictated by the farmer. Whereas, like, with the deer is out roaming. It's completely free. It can go wherever it wants, can eat wherever it wants, and go under a tree or out from it whenever it wants. But it lives in a much more dangerous environment. Like, freedom, when they say freedom isn't free, I don't look at it as freedom is the cost of a yellow ribbon or some nonsense like that. I look at it as, you know, freedom is the cost of, you know, going out and potentially, you know, running into a situation kind of like these people who are like, hey, I want to buy drugs or I want to sell drugs. That's what I'm going to do. They've elected to do this. Mm-hmm. So now they're in this situation where they're in a dangerous environment where things like this can happen because, you know, you don't have regulations in place to be able to stop. You know, this is not Amazon where, you know, you're going to get refunded your money if you get ripped off. Again, like, you have total freedom there. So it's a very liberating thing, but it's also a very nerve-wracking thing, but it creates an environment where you're...
There's obviously, an adrenaline element to this thing, right? I mean, you're doing this, you're somebody, you're not doing this just for the money, right? You're running one of these marketplaces. It's a lifestyle. This is your way of sticking it to the man, perhaps, maybe, you know, free market, right? And you're doing it in the most extreme form. I'm not saying, all these guys that run this are, you know, maybe have their heart, you know, or maybe if any of them have their heart in the right place, but I think certainly some of them do, right? Like Ross, right? Ross Ulbricht, he just wanted to create a free market, right? He wanted to experiment with how we could just have a marketplace where individuals can come and decide what they want to buy and sell, right?
Yep.
As long as they're not hurting anybody else in the process. But
do you know what's crazy? Let me ask you this, because so many people get this wrong. Do you think that was Silk Market the first dark net market to exist? If it wasn't, when was there another one?
I mean, it was the first Bitcoin market to exist, right?
Yeah.
Bitcoin, it was basically the first app for Bitcoin, right? It was the first use case for Bitcoin. It was the first successful company that was using Bitcoin or whatever application.
Yeah, that's a great distinction right there. You know, because like there was a market before called the farmers market, and like whenever I hear people talk about this, it's even by like companies who do, investigations into the dark net specifically. They'll have like these conferences. They'll talk about it. They'll be like, you know, the first dark net market was the Silk Road. I'm like, no, Watson. Like, you're supposed to be an expert. Like, I consider myself a novice in all things, you know, because I know enough to know that I don't know anything, you know, and that's kind of just the position I take. Like, I'm never going to be like, this is 100% certain, because like, I've been wrong so many times in my life.
Oh, yeah.
I've just lost faith.
Take everything with a grain of salt. This is, you know, for sure.
The real beauty of freedom is like, even in systems where things are constructed with so many restrictions and control grids that exist, that you feel like you'll never get out of that kind of control grid, you still have people who can think their way out of it. And I think, That's the real beauty of crypto in general, not like this one coin or that one coin, but just like in general was this whole thought process of we're going to think our way out of this economic enslavement, you know, we're going to create a whole other system that we can use to have economic freedom, which, you know, in a debt slave society is real freedom.
Yeah, it was engineers that engineered their way out, right? Like cypherpunks, freaking cypherpunks. They're just crypto engineers that were trying to promote liberty. It's working, man. It's definitely working. It's very exciting, and we're along for the ride. I mean, obviously, I'm trying to do my part. You're trying to do your part, and I do feel like we're making a ton of progress towards getting to the point where people are going to be able to transact more freely than ever using marketplaces like this and using Monero, right? And just allowing people to freely use their money as they wish peer-to-peer without the state or any corporations being part of those transactions and deciding whether they can or can't do it, right? Obviously, within the realm of morals and just, you know, the simple code of as long as you're not harming anyone else, it's okay. But I wanted to hear your thought, though, back to the point. These guys, obviously, all right, so maybe there it could just be some, somebody who's out there who's just taking it to the next levels on a power trip, seeing what they feel like they, you know, they're playing chess well and they can get away with it, so why not extract more money? But could it be something else? Could it be the feds or something? Could it be
the one thing that I can tell you for certain is I don't know for certain.
Right. Because obviously you don't know, but I'm just wanting to get your insight on it because it seems very much out of the ordinary, and the effect it's gonna have is it's going to push people away from using these marketplaces.
More so than a normal
rug pull, right? So there's, like you said, there's normally everybody's already ready for the rug pulls, but now it's like rug pull plus you get put in this situation where you get extorted. It's like, oh shit.
So going from 2022 to 2023, there's an estimated like 1.7 billion additional amount of money that went through the darknet markets. So I don't like this idea of things slowing down because things get bad. I don't think is a real thing. I think the opposite's true. I think if anything, it draws attention. Like when you start talking about it in like mainstream media, that, you know, person who never really heard about it, you know, starts to hear about it. It's kind of like how you saw crypto spill into mainstream media. Mm. You know, people
Streisand effect.
Like you're talking to your neighbor or something about Bitcoin or XMR, and like they're like, oh yeah, that's a fad. It's like this is the same dude, you know, back in the early 90s that was telling you the internet was a fad.
Right. Yeah.
So
it's no better than the fax machine.
But I don't think it discourages anything. I think what happens is it's a hydra, and when you cut one head off, like all the other ones get fed more and they just grow back more so.
Right. And they come back in new and improved. Right. And with that,
they come back with features.
they come back with features and more decentralized. Right. We're also working on, you know, those things are happening as well. Right. We've seen decentralized marketplaces already. None really took off. Open Bazaar was an attempt.
I loved Open Bazaar, man. I thought the idea of like, you know, a third party moderators for disputes, I thought that was so cool. I was like, that was one thing. I was like, if this gets big, like I will quit vending and I will just do adjudication all day. I would love to do that, you know? it totally tanked. You know, it sucked too.
Yeah, it just never took hold. I mean, there were issues there, right? Because they were just Bitcoin based. That was before Bitcoin Cash, right? Yep. And then I think they tried doing it as Bitcoin Cash, but I think part of the problem was the Bitcoin transaction fees were getting too high. I could be wrong. I think that was kind of one of the things that slowed them down. Just wasn't right place, right time. So that people are still trying to solve that. I know Zano's working on a marketplace, which seems interesting, and it would be like a decentralized marketplace built using, you know, the Zano coin and the ability to build essentially kind of like apps on Zano. So that's pretty interesting. And obviously there's a ton of other things that people are working on. But as things stand now, you know, for those who are like interested in doing research and whatever, engaging with these markets, what kind of advice can you give people out there? Like where they can, like, in best places to go and learn about these things other than following your channel, like best resources, you know, how to identify marketplaces that are reliable versus ones not to trust. And then
like anything else, experience, time, you know, you have to, you know, to be able to do anything effectively, you have to learn about the basics of it, you know? So like if I'm going to, for example, if I'm going to be an OSINT practitioner, I'm going to go out and find information. I need to first know about OPSEC and how to keep my information secret. Because if I go out and I start doing OSINT with my Facebook account and I'm like law enforcement trying to get, you know, information on a drug dealer, like Facebook's going to be like, oh, you checked out this guy's profile. So they're going to show me to him as a friend suggestion. And when like that drug dealer sees this cop being suggested as a friend, it's going to be a flag. So, right off the rip, I would say, you know, concentrate on defensive, like security and OPSEC right off the rip. And then, you know, just don't take, you know, one source's word for anything. Even like my channel, you know, I have people who disagree with me all the time. They'd be like, no, that's not right. This is how it is. And those are some of my favorite things in the world, because then you're teaching me. Like, if I'm wrong, I want to be corrected. It makes me a better person. It makes me a more intelligent person, right? We all adapt and move forward together. And that's, I think that's what makes, as a community, that's what makes us, you know, incredibly dangerous, is because that adaptation is something that's key to survival inherently.
How about just like what are some good resources though? Like, Fred, right? Like, what are good?
Probably one of my favorite resources for like, as maybe Darknet news specifically, is like Tor Times. I think that's a great resource that's really underrated. Hacker News for like cybersecurity stuff. This is a crazy amount, man. I mean, you could just hop on YouTube all day and just watch stuff all day, or podcasts. That's the thing. Nowadays, there's such a proliferation of content that it's not even really like where to find it, because there's so much high quality stuff out there. It's just actually going out and doing it, you know? It's kind of like back in the day when we had manuals for things and someone would be like, I don't get it. And, you know, they'd tell them like RTFM, you know, like read the fucking manual. And we have so many resources out there that just, I mean, plugging that question into Google or going to ChatGPT and asking that question would probably get you much better sources than I could ever quote anyone. You know, I know for me personally, it's more about like optimization of the information. So like one of the things I've been doing is I've been grabbing like some of the different sources that I use, whether it's like Tor Times or Dark Owl or a lot of those different RSS feeds that are news feeds that are like CTI or Darknet related or cybersecurity related news feeds. And I hop on like Alexa Blueprints. I put in that RSS feed and I put it in as a news brief. So now like when I wake up in the morning, I can ask Alexa and it'll tell me all of the RSS feeds that I put in. It will spit back a summarization of all the news that's going on that's been published on those feeds. So I think it's like a question of how do you digest this information in a productive way that's the most efficient. And like as far as like that goes, man, like I got a ton of RSS feeds. So it's a big question. But it's kind of like asking someone nowadays, what's Mike's phone number? Because it's like saved, you know, and you don't know. You know,
I don't know my wife's phone number. It's like,
I could tell you, know, like one of my favorites that I frequent is definitely Hacker News. I would say like, if you want to learn about stuff like cybersecurity, Hack the Box is awesome. Awesome hands-on stuff there.
But just to simplify things, right? If I'm just, if I'm a noob, I mean, I guess your advice would be, well, don't be a noob. You got to go learn stuff. But if I'm a noob and I just want to go explore the dark markets, what are some resources I could rely on so I could do it in the right way from, you know, step one, right? You know, where I know.
Yeah. So even that's kind of a risky proposition, because like link directories are subject to become phishing directories at any point. So, like right now, I would say the only one that I personally trust would be daunt.link.
Okay.
And that's when it's available on the ClearNet, but it has tons of markets and forums and all stuff related to that. But again, like I really hate to endorse anything, because everything is subject to switch up. Like my archetype video where I dissect that market and I do market analysis on it, tomorrow they could exit scan, you know? And that's why, like, at the end of the day, like, trust is really something that you can't trust anything, especially in that context, you know? But you can verify things, like you can verify vendor sales and stuff like that, but that's about as far as that goes. Yeah, so you see, you got, like, you know, the forums, the markets, the shops. That's probably... you know, that would be the one that I like the most. And you'll find a bunch of ones on there for, I think they list Tor Times on there too.
So that's kind of my next question. So this is good, right? Yeah, I mean, this is good information you're putting out there. I'm sorry to like try to like pinpoint it, but I just know if I was listening and I'm a noob, I would love to hear like this is good info you're dropping right here. Yeah. Honestly, guys, like you said, rule number one is take everything with a grain of salt. Trust nobody, including Samurai. Right? We're just
seriously.
There.
Yeah.
So don't trust Verify, but everybody knows that. So I guess my second question then is marketplaces themselves, right? We saw what happened with Incognito. What is like, what are some of the top marketplaces out there that, you know, have earned trust and that perhaps are least likely to scam people? Obviously, you know, it's a hard question to answer, but I imagine there's some
marketplaces. Yeah, I think it's almost kind of like it's an impossible question to answer because the only person that knows, like there are definitely telltale signs of a market that's going to exit scam. We kind of covered those earlier, but the only person that knows that a market's going to exit scam is the admin, right? That's the only person. So again, like to say like a false sense of security is one of the most dangerous things that anyone can have. So it would be like, I would consider it like a horrible misstep to say any one thing is trustworthy because that's the last thing I would want anyone to do. I wouldn't want anyone to trust any market or any forum or any source of information. And that is probably the quintessential skill is like, you know, that's where we come back to that verify stage. Like I can't say this is trustworthy or that's good because at the end of the day, it can go bad tomorrow. So it would be a horrible misstep for me to label something like that. Like the old Dawn thing, I put that out there because, you know, you're like, well, what do you use? That is what I use right now for links. Because anywhere else I've seen issues with, aside from maybe Tor.Taxi, I think they have a solid reputation from what I've seen, from what I know. I haven't heard anyone complain about them. So yeah, that's that.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah. Cause I saw you, I think in one of your videos, you were talking about, which forum was it? It was, Archetype.
Mm-hmm.
You did a thing that I thought that was really cool. So you think they're one of the perhaps, better markets in terms of like usability and the features and like the things that they're doing on there as a marketplace
right now? Yeah. And I think that, you know, that could be completely different tomorrow. You know, and that's really the key to take away is that nothing is perfect. Like we don't have a dark net market that's been around, you know, in existence this whole time. So they all, you know, they all leave a lot of them exit scam. Some of them get busted and, you know, very few exit gracefully, which I think, honestly, I think if you had a bunch of markets that exited gracefully, I think they would get to a point where like the trust would build up in the community to a point where like it would make the community much better. Like one thing that I will tell you that I dislike that turns me off automatically is when I see a version 2. If I see a market come out and it's a version 2 of an original market, I won't even go to it.
Mm. Incognito 2. We're back. I dare you to trust us again. like, all right. There's something about these guys. I don't know. I'm going to give it a shot.
I mean, like exit scams are definitely, they're an acceptable form of cost.
Like I said, I don't understand, maybe I'm missing, like why they're not using multisig. I know it was a little difficult to create Monero, but it is possible. Like we're doing it with ours. There's, you know, there's ways to do it. And then certainly with Bitcoin, multisig's possible. Why is that not the default? How did that not take hold yet? Right? You think the market demand would be so strong for something like that. That would be the main marketplace.
I think you have a big pull for that control. You know, like I said, a good portion of them exit scam, right? And if that's your goal at the end of the day, that wouldn't be a switch you want to give up.
Right. So just nobody's taking the wow. So anybody who's doing these dark markets are like, they're all, it's always gonna, they have the personality probably of, you know, this is gonna be a thing, I'm gonna come in and come out, right?
I don't know. I know that I had a message the other day on Dread in a DM, where I had a market administrator who wrote me and told me that they had multi-sig for XMR. I forget the.
Yeah, it just seems like that would naturally grab hold. And if you want to compete as a marketplace, that you would be like, we have Monero multi-sig. All right. Why wouldn't I go with that one? It seems like the least risky, right?
So you've seen multi-sig too with Bitcoin earlier in like, to, you know, 07, or not 07, 2017. And I would see a lot of people complaining like, oh, it's complicated. I had to do all these extra steps.
Okay.
Which, I guess, it goes back to, you know, that thing I was talking about, convenience and security.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
At the slide, you know.
Yeah, so somebody's got to step up and build a good user interface for it, right?
Yeah, it won't be me now.
Well, we're doing it for XMR Bazaar, so I wouldn't be surprised if you find some version of that.
Oh, yeah. There. Yeah, that'll get it done.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, definitely. Shit.
But that's awesome. It's a revolutionary act, you know.
Yeah, I'm excited that we're launching with. I have no idea where it's gonna go. Like my goal is to, you know, personally use it to live off Monero by putting posts up there, being like, you know, I'm looking to hire somebody for Monero for this, or buy this with Monero. So I'm excited in that regard.
Probably one of my favorite tips that I ever got from you was this not a plug, but like, is Cake Wallet. Like I love it, man. I've used it. I still have it. Like, I still have it on my phone. And I love how flexible it is. I love that I can switch between currencies. I can pull it out at any point. I can go get a gift card like that. And like when I first did, I was like, oh, what do they want? What's the percentage I gotta pay to get a gift card? It's like nothing. I was like, what?
It makes a lot of sense. It makes Monero very usable, right?
Yes.
Vic has done a tremendous job. That's always been his mission, right?
And that's the thing, right? It goes back to that ease, that convenience factor, you know?
Yeah. With regards to Monero, can you give us any insight there? I mean, I brought up that other marketplace, which we know is Monero-based archetype. But are most of them now Monero based these days? Like, what's kind of the currency?
A lot of them have like dual currencies. You definitely see like Monero only markets, but a lot of them also have those dual currencies. And like I said, you also have that drive to, you know, for market admins who know what the end result's going to be. You know, in 3 years, I'm going to exit scam and make 50 mil. You know, so you're always going to have that. And then the buyers, and like if there's a market and on that market they don't have any multi-sig and it's like the admin controls everything, if there's a ton of buyers on there, no matter what, you're gonna have vendors. Like they're gonna follow the buyers. It's like when Dream Market existed, I hated Dream Market, but there was a ton of buyers, you know. It's just, you know, like that's what you do. You go where the business is.
And they just, because they just did a better job at marketing or something? Why, like, what?
I mean, Dream was horrible, man. Like, I remember if I had an issue, you'd write support, and they would never write you back. Like, never. Like, just ignore it. It's like, but it's crazy to see that, you know, you also have markets now with really good support, but you always have the question. You're like, you know, do they have good support? Because they're going to pull that rug out from under you. But it also makes it dangerous, but it also keeps you on your toes and it keeps you sharp. And like, if you're really free, you need to be on point, you know, because it's a dangerous world, you know. You know, unless you're a sheep in a cage, then it's not, you know. But in that case, you know, it's like,
you're nice and safe in your little cage.
You know, I mean, our system of money, you know, we have the government takes 3 months worth of your salary and taxes, you know. And like, if I come over to you and I take your, if I take your work, your, I take your labor from you, under, you know, force or threat of duress, it's extortion and it's slavery because I've taken your work and giving you nothing for it. You know, I hate taxes. I can't stand it. I pay all my taxes though.
Of course, yeah, because you don't want to get thrown in the, you know, thrown in the cage. You don't want to come take more, right? It is extortion. So that's why, you know, that's why I was, my thought was with Incognito, like, this kind of sounds like what they already do to us, right?
Yeah.
Like they were saying, they extorted all the users, and then they assessed their tax based on the level of people's income, which is.
But like with Incognito, it's still a choice though, right? Like
right.
Like, you know, if it's not, it's never a choice for, you know, not to pay your income tax. Like, you're gonna get 20 years.
So. They got that monopoly on violence, man. They're the biggest gang in town. That's all. That's all.
Oh, yeah.
It is.
Yeah, yeah. Sure, without a doubt. Yeah. Yeah, it's like, you know, you can sell drugs for decades if you're dealing with DEA, and, you know, or you do all these crazy ass things, but, like, you know, don't pay your taxes. I don't care where you move, they'll find you.
100%. Pay your taxes.
Things you want. We can't do anything about the drugs. We can't do, you know, anything about any of the stuff. Like, you do a ton of different stuff. It's like there are things that are concentrated on and things that are not concentrated. Both of those things are given the amounts of attention they're given for very specific reasons, you know, I feel anyways. But it is great, man, to see just crypto in general be accepted as something that's not, you know, like, you know, I remember for at least half a decade, people would tell me that it was all, you know, it's all a scam. It's not real. And I'm like, dude, it's more real than that green shit you're holding. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
What you're holding is an instrument of debt. You know, it's an instrument of wealth. It's actually, you know, accumulates and builds value. And if we look at, you know, the inception of even just like Bitcoin or XMR, but if we look at a 100-year history, which we don't have yet, but if we look at a 100-year history, the price of the dollar steadily goes down. It's like the price of gold steadily goes up. And like you could, you know, you have that argument that people make and they're like, oh, well, you know, gold's worth more. And I'm like, no, it's not. Your money is worth less because of inflation. Like if I had a gold coin back in Rome, I could take that gold coin, I could cash it in, I could get like a custom made toga and some nice custom made sandals and, you know, get a whole really nice outfit. And today, if I have that same gold coin, I can go get a nice suit, a nice hat, a nice pair. Like it's worth the same amount of money. It's just the measurement that we have. Our measurement of that resource, you know, which is our currency, changes.
And it represents real value. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and if something that is of real value increases in value over time, not decreases, you know,
right.
And that should be like basic common sense, you know, and you know, but you have, you know, all this like, you know, nonsense where you have like, you know, economists talk about horseshoe recessions and all this other. Just total BS. And it's like, if you understand that every dollar that's put out there is loaned at interest, if I control the ability for money to exist and I say, here's a dollar, you owe me $1.25, that 25 cents doesn't exist. It was never created. So how do you pay back that 25 cents? You borrow more, you know, and now you know, you borrow another $2. Now I say, okay, now you owe me $3. But there's only, you know, say $2 that exists. You're never
fractional reserve,
and that's what makes it a scam. And that's why I think it's a beautiful thing that we've literally invented our way out of economic, you know, slavery. But it's also a very dangerous thing. Again, it goes back to our whole point with freedom. You know, freedom's extremely dangerous, and it's you know, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. You know, see if there's some point where, you know, Doug gets arrested. You know. We're talking about XMR. You know?
Don't even put that thought out there in the universe.
Listen, I'm talking about start rolling out the propaganda machine, saying like, "Wait, terrorists use
that, it." That's when Doug runs for Congress again. as I'll be like Trump. I'll be as they're trying to fucking convict me. I'll be out there running for office or something.
I live in Vermont.
So I would certainly go down swinging. That's for sure. Oh my God! God forbid. I mean, dude, I mean, if we get to that point, then, you know, we're all fucked anyways, the way I look at it, right? So, like,
I think you have a massive system of control that's looking at a serious threat. I mean, that's exactly what it is. So I think that's a realistic conversation to have as far as like threat intelligence goes. You know, you have people who what was it, like 2 days before the planes went into the towers? It wasn't Cheney. This is the other one. It was talking about how there was trillions of dollars missing.
Oh yeah. You know? Yeah. No, that was it was the head of the Pentagon. I forget who it was. Yeah, whatever. But yeah, right? Yeah, like that clip where he's like, we misplaced, right? Like $3 trillion. That was insane.
So, I mean, I think you have, there's, you know, traditionally has been controlling a monetary system is incredibly powerful, right? Like, what was it? Like Nathan Rothschild that said, give me control of a nation's currency and I care not who makes its laws. It's very, very telling about, you know, the power that's inherent with, you know, the ability to regulate a monetary system.
It was Donald Rumsfeld. Rumsfeld. Remember that's who it was.
Yep.
So
I think it's dangerous. I think the creation of crypto offers a lot of freedom. I think there's a lot of people that have a vested interest in not seeing people be free. You know,
what do you think of the attack that we're seeing on Monero? Right, it was delisted from Binance. Obviously, people are, you know, you got people like Senator Warren that would ban it if she could. Things seem to be ramping up against it, like you're talking about.
That's how it starts.
What's that?
It's how it starts.
Anyway, it's how it starts. So where do you see things go? What's your current take on Monero?
It's a threat, man. It's a threat to people who have systems of control, that have had these systems of control, you know, in place for, you know, 100 years.
How do you see things playing out though in the U.S.?
Huh?
How do you see things playing out though in the U.S., particularly with regards to like how they end up treating Monero?
I could see a big push. Like, I mean, we already saw. I mean, I remember when you could do your taxes and they didn't even mention crypto. Remember that?
Oh yeah, now it's like the first. Now it's the first question. It's like,
so, you know, like any form of registration is a form of control, and I think that'll ramp up. I think you'll have more laws put in place that are nonsensical that don't even need to be there. You know, honestly, I think Congress should meet twice a year. You know,
less.
I really don't see, you know, how you have this much to talk about. You know, we have, if you just put it in this perspective, at the end of the day, you have a lawyer. This person spends 7 years learning about law, right? And you know, going to college and paying a lot of money to do it. When they leave and they go off to practice law, they specialize in one form of law. I've never met a lawyer who does tax law, criminal law, personal injury, divorce law, international law, business. I've never met one that is like, oh, my specialty is everything. Like, even people who study it for 7 years can only study one type of it. So my point with that is, when you have that many laws, it makes it so that at any point in time, anyone can be a criminal, because even people who study it for 7 years don't know all of the laws, and they definitely don't know the ones that are constantly passed after they leave law school. And like, I think to back that up, there's a great study by a guy, I want to say his name's Silverman or Silverstein or something like that, who is a Harvard professor. And he wrote a book called 3 Felonies a Day that basically talks about how like your average law abiding citizen on an average day commits 3 felonies. And like, that's like, oh, well, that's horrible. Like, and it's like, yeah, it is. But like, if you create a system where I don't like what Doug's saying, so let's just watch him for 24 hours. Oh, look, he just committed a felony. We can put him in jail for 7 years. You know, when you tend to go to prison, you know, people tend to forget about you. And it's a great way to get rid of dissidents or people who are dangerous in a society. And I think that's a really easy way to go about it. And then like you read like the 13th Amendment, where it basically, you know, says that once you are incarcerated, once you are a felon, You're an indentured servitude. You're a slave. And they can force you to work. And like this is I think that would be the future. It's a legalized version of slavery for all the people who disagree or oppose what's said. And that's, you know, again, that's how it starts, you know. And the people that don't say anything back are encouraging that system to, you know, move forward. And we see that with any dictator that you know, traditionally comes along, is if no one says anything, no one does anything to stop it, it just gets worse and worse. And, you know, the tyranny gets worse and worse and worse. And then, you know, the single people that are willing to stand out and talk about it, they get persecuted, they get made example of. And it kind of sets that precedent for everyone else to fall back and it can just accept whatever is being handed out. So I would say the best way to tell what the future is going to be is to look at the past.
It's government just doing what they've always done, is what you're saying.
Like, dude, I'll totally send you commissary money, man. You just gotta write. I'll send you a couple books, you know. Yeah. That's what you're doing. It's wicked dangerous, you know. That's exactly what we're talking about, you know. We laugh about it right now. We'll see where we're at in 20 years.
Shit. Nah, man. Nah. We're on the right side.
I agree with that, you know. Yeah.
I think ultimately the political will is still there in this country to be supportive of liberty and free speech when it's really up against the wall. I mean, we saw with PGP, right? That, I don't know. Yeah, I'd be shocked. Yeah. I mean, what they did with Tornado Cash, that was pretty egregious. The steps they took there against Tornado Cash, that was pretty wild. But yeah, I don't know how much further they'll go against Monero. And ultimately, I do think it would be, you know, a Supreme Court case, and Monero will succeed. Otherwise, I'm leaving this country. Yeah, I'm no longer a part of this. And I think there'd be a lot of, obviously not maybe just because of Monero, but people realizing like, wait a minute, and then that's a real attack of on Bitcoin at that point too, right? There's really no way to throw one out without throwing the other out. Because they're technically
I mean demonization, you know, mm-hmm. and making examples of people. I think that's traditionally what we see. Am I saying that's what's going to happen? No, I'm not. I have no idea what's going to happen. But that's kind of the good thing about life, is it makes it interesting to see what does happen next.
Yeah, man, I'm already, you know, whatever. I'm going to be 44. Life's short, right? So it's like...
He already resigned himself to... You got to.
I'll do push-ups and pull-ups every day, I'll read philosophy.
You get to a point where you just do it on general principle. You're like, this is me. This is who I am. This is what I believe. You know, there are people that are going to, you know, hate you, and there are people that are going to, you know, come at you. But again, like, that should just be something that keeps you sharp and on point.
I've always been driven by my own principles in a very large way, whether for good or bad. I don't know.
As Omar would say from The Wire, man's got to have a code. You know, that's absolutely true.
100%. I like that. Good expression. Back to marketplaces. Big question, and you were going over it a little bit in that video. But what would you see as being, you know, I thought that was a great topic. What would you see as being kind of an ideal marketplace? What needs to be done? What does the ideal marketplace look like these days?
In imaginary land, I would say, like a decentralized one where people kind of like Open Bazaar. You know, I really liked that model. It's just it's just super difficult to get the masses to take hold of, you know? Honestly, I wish that drug markets didn't exist at all. I think incarcerating people for decades at a time for nonviolent victimless crimes is fucking stupid, you know? So, you know, but I also think that there is a time and a place, you know, for the justice system. Absolutely. There's definitely, I met a ton of, you know, socio and psychopaths that I would never want to get out, you know, and be around my family or, you know, my loved ones or, you know, I know people to this day that if they got out, they would fucking kill four people, you know, first day without even, you know, moments hesitation. So like, there's definitely a place for it, but, I think like the perfect market would be a situation where we don't need a market at all, where we're actually free. Like we should have the ability to put whatever we want in our bodies. If we own our bodies, we should be able to dictate what we do with them. Whether that's drugs or tattoos or I don't, it's irrelevant. Now, if you're talking about like from a technological standpoint, I would say I would go back to the whole decentralized, you know, decentralized, community-based, you know, system where things like, you know, exit scams and, you know, things like that are impossible, or you have ways to reward vendors who maintain a reputation for certain periods of time, like, you know, maybe lower transactional fees or something along those lines, because right now you really don't, it's like, you know, for the people who are selling, they, you know, reputation obviously is important, but like they can selective scam for 2 years and then just go into full, if as a vendor, go into full out exit scam mode and then reboot the next day or months before that with a totally new identity and rebuild that. Like there has to be some kind of incentive to not become a scumbag, and really, you know, with that anonymity, there really isn't, you know. And a lot of times a lot of darknet vendors will reboot identities just, you know, just for the sake of it, you know, new PGP keys,
right? So they have to be awarded for being around longer, right? Essentially,
yeah, just, I mean, to some degree, because even then you have to question, like, okay, well, doesn't that, you know, that affects like their threat model, because now they're around longer, like, you know, how does that affect their OPSEC? That's individualistic for each one, depending on the country they're in and a whole bunch of other factors. But you know, I like, what's it look like? I have no idea, you know. I know that I'm not capable of creating it, you know. I think there's a lot of people who are way more intelligent than me that, like, I get lucky enough to be able to, you know, be on like the what is it? What's that? On the shoulder of giants, you know. I think that's a great description for what I do, because like, you know, I don't invent anything. I just kind of look at all the other cool stuff that everyone else does and kind of point it out. And that's my thing, man. But I think yeah, whatever it is, like, it'll be interesting. It'll be cool. And I think something horrible will happen and it'll screw it up. And then what we'll do is there'll be an evolution after that, and they'll adapt, and, you know, it'll be, and that'll just be, it's like the security battle in general, going back to like the burglar and the locksmith and how it's evolved, you know, all the way up to the point that, you know, we have it now where people are, you know, stealing cars with flipper zeros and shit. You know what I mean? So, whatever it'll be interesting. I can't imagine it though. I think it's like asking someone in the 60s, what would it look like in 2023? And the only thing they can talk about is like flying cars, you know, because they have no concept of cell phones or any of this crazy stuff that's going to be affecting society way more than any flying car possibly would. You know, like, you know, TikTok in the hands of your kid is going to have a lot more influence than a flying car, you know. But there, I think there are insidious threats that like no one could really predict. And I think that's true with anything, including dark net markets. Like this admin exit scamming, no one saw that coming. But if you think about it for a minute, a criminal doing whatever he can to extort or take from people, it does make sense. And I just hope that the community sees it, and from it they say, okay, well, there's nothing of value here. So when the next one does it, like, they get nothing. You know, people just laugh at them. That would be the ideal evolutionary step.
Good stuff, man. Good stuff. Where you want to put out resources where people can just find you? I obviously got your YouTube channel.
Yeah, for sure. My YouTube channel's Doing Fed Time. I have a website, Doing Fed Time, and the same name on basically every social media outlet. Some of the more toned down professional posts you'll find on LinkedIn under my actual name, Sam Benn.
Awesome, buddy. Thanks for taking the time jumping on.
For sure.
Greatly appreciate it. Yeah, maybe, like I said, maybe there's some way we get you down to Buenos Aires. That'd be cool. Have you come down?
Yeah, it would be interesting.
And I do want to reach out to you about XMR Bazaar.
Okay.
Maybe get some. Maybe you're interested in doing some consulting on XMR Bazaar. All right, buddy. We will we'll be in touch. Thank you so much, man.
Sounds good.
All right. Cheers, man.
Thank you for joining us on this week's episode. We release new episodes every week. You can find and subscribe to our show on YouTube, Odyssey, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Go to MoneroTalk.live to subscribe for a full list of places where you can watch and listen. If you want to interact with us, guests, or other podcast listeners, you can follow us on Twitter. And please leave us a review on iTunes. It helps people find the show, and we are always happy to read them. So thanks so much, and we look forward to being back next week.